dans le quartier. Tous mes amis me font rêver. Autour de moi, beaucoup d'enfants.
The music of Luko Ajafi. Am I saying this correctly, Utrecht?
You are. You know, he's a big-time talkback listener.
Oh, great.
Big time. And
good afternoon, Mr. Ajafi.
Yes, yeah. Right. A big-time talkback listener and a long-time WBAI supporter and a wonderful musician. He dropped by just to say hello just last night. And we had a very long conversation, and this is just to encourage him on his path. He is a performer of very positive music. He's Haitian and a great artist, and I'm hoping somewhere in the not-too-distant future we'll be staging the Luko Ajafi concert.
Sure.
We have so many musician friends, really.
Yeah.
It's about time to gather them up once again into a nice big concert, a good old rollicking concert, and show off the talents of our listeners. So this is, in fact, a shout-out to Luko, and tell him I want to tell you to continue. You're doing marvelous work, and thank you so much for the power of your music.
And it's great music. It's 5 minutes now after 4 o'clock, and you're listening to Talk Back here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. I am Hugh Hamilton. My guest in studio this afternoon is Utrecht C. Lead, who is general manager here at WBAI 99.5 FM, and who is joining me for this afternoon's discussion on the issue of free speech. We did in the first hour explore various and sundry permutations of this question of free speech, but there is a certain kind of speech that is very difficult to define. Speech, for example, that might be considered racist speech. And I'm not talking about people using the N-word. I'm talking about people making statements which appear on a prima facie evaluation would suggest that these statements are lumping a group of people of a certain melanin content into a particular group and pattern of behavior, that sort of thing. Anti-Semitic speech, for example. The idea that if you were to refer to a group of people who are known to be Jewish and to suggest or imply that this group of people exhibits a certain kind of conduct or behavior, or that you have had reason to experience such conduct or behavior at the hands of these persons, you know, anti-Semitic speech or anti-gay speech, portrayals or representations of people as being your stereotypical gay persons. These are not things that are very clearly definable to begin with. Do we have a responsibility to protect A, ourselves, B, our listeners, against that kind of speech? And where do we draw the line?
Well, I operate and have operated on the assumption that we are having mature conversation, no matter what the program, that we are coming to the program on this end of the microphone and on the other end of the receiver, that we are coming to this process with an open mind and also with a concentration that we want to get the best out of this. So the tone set by the host is very important. But beyond that, you're correct. There are people who try, for whatever reason, you know, you find a knucklehead or two who would try to distort or try to disturb the level of conversation with whatever it is that is particularly psychologically attacking them at that particular time. Or maybe they just are built this way and they're just being their natural selves. In the context of the discussion, though, I find it always very useful to confront it. Don't hide it. You confront it. You put the person on point. What are you talking about? When you say so and so and so, what are you referring to? Because that, too, is part of the education that we have to go. It is not enough, go through. It is not enough simply to say, well, this is a racist statement. I think it is important to engage it and to tear it apart, disassemble it in full view of everyone, because this is how society functions. Some people are not necessarily being racist when they say racist things. And you can easily distinguish that when you get into the conversation. We've been running away from that kind of conversation. Some people would bash Jews or they would bash gays at the drop of a hat. Really what they're saying is, it's a multi-layered thing that they're saying. Sometimes they're sending you a signal that they presume you're a member of the club. So you use that opportunity to disassociate yourself and to disabuse them of that notion. Sometimes they use it simply to as a sabotaging act against your program, and sometimes it's just because they don't know better. But it is important and helpful to ascertain just where that person is. I think it is important to meet the person where the person is and confront the situation, not necessarily in an ugly way. Because some people genuinely are not harm, they do not mean any harm. They don't. It's just that we are all conditioned in this society to accept all kinds of bad behavior. We are conditioned. Those of us sitting behind the microphones as well. We are conditioned to accept bad conduct. Some of us as journalists, for example, are repulsive in our conduct. I think I've seen reporters, I don't want them to be near anybody. I don't want to hear a report from them because they are personally so offensive. They're personally so crass that I cannot bring myself to listening to anything they have to say, nor would I place great confidence in the authenticity of their reports simply because of who they are, how they come across. Some people have that attitude that, being nasty is the equivalent of being thorough or being professional. It's not. I would not go to a dentist who is mean and nasty. I wouldn't listen to a reporter who is nasty and horrible to people. I don't like horrible people, just myself. I just don't. Even on when I was doing this program, one of the laws, one of the big rules was, you know, you cannot be impolite, period. I'm not going to accept it. There's no negotiation about it. We just are not going to accept it. We are interested in coming to this space at this time on the dial so that we can freely involve ourselves in the great adventure of plumbing each other's intellectual depths. That's all we want. Now, that requires an understanding that we are doing this as mature people, and as mature people, we know how to behave. We know how to express ourselves. We know how to comport ourselves and how to conduct conversation and transactions with each other. We are not here to eviscerate anybody. We just want to have a conversation and part ways, even if we disagree, and especially when we disagree, to be so pleasant and so humane about it so that we could come back to each other tomorrow. Maybe tomorrow we will find another thing to disagree about. And maybe you and I have had vigorous discussions and debates that have lasted for days.
Indeed we have.
And yet, even if we disagree, I can, within half a second of ending the conversation, we are having fun because there's absolute respect. I will never approach you with the attitude that you are just a protozoan or something. You know, that you are a full-fledged human being, and you don't
whatever
have
that means.
Yes, you don't have to ask for my respect. You automatically get it. Now, anybody who approaches me in a disrespectful way automatically disqualifies him or herself. I do not extend respect to such people. But you automatically get my respect. That's how I approach people.
We're talking with Utrecht Lee, general manager here at WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, where it is 14 minutes now after 4 o'clock, and we go now to your telephone calls, your questions, your comments for Utrecht Lee, who's my guest in studio. I'm Hugh Hamilton. The telephone number is 212-209-2900, and the focus of our discussion this afternoon is the question of free speech. What is free speech? Is there a right to free speech? Is free speech absolute? Is it defined by certain parameters? Who sets those parameters, if such parameters exist? Who defines what those paradigms are? And is free speech a good thing to begin with, even if there were such a thing? Other permutations of the subject we are exploring this afternoon. We are plumbing the depths, the intellectual where are we plumbing? we're plumbing someplace in each other's minds.
Right, fine.
In each other's minds.
Good enough by me.
That's right.
We're plumbing each other's intellectual depths.
Okay, good. I think I can live with that.
Yeah.
Okay, so we go now to the telephones. You can let me know what your name is and where you're calling from, and I'd like you to make your questions and your comments as concise as possible so that we can maximize our use and benefit of the guest's expertise and experience here in studio this afternoon. This is Talk Back, and you are on the air with Utrecht Lee. Hi, good afternoon.
Hi, you. Are you Tree?
Hello.
I just want to say, this is Adam, by the way. I don't know if you remember me from when I used to call your show.
Okay, this is Adam. Where are you calling from, Adam?
I'm calling from Manhattan.
Okay, Adam.
I used to call you Trees from payphones and kept the throat reporters in. Now, I just want to say I believe in free speech. And I noticed that a lot of the callers who call to discuss various issues, like internal issues at the station, this and that, aren't allotted any airtime for their grievances, you know, and I understand maybe it's a legal matter with the station and the lawsuits and this and that, but Utrecht used to be my favorite person on the air. You know that I used to preach to everyone in this city to put on at 3 o'clock every day, Monday through Thursday, your show. Are you still there?
Yes, we're here, okay. And I'd like you to get to your question so that we can move on. Yes,
I have the utmost respect for you, Utrice, and you has a great show, and he knows I've called in. And I say, wait, one more point, and he always lets me make it. I don't know if you remember I made the point, my 5-point traffic plan, no private cars, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, Adam, but I'm going to have to ask you to make the point
okay,
so we can move on
point.
Now. Yeah.
Utrice, all the rhetoric I've heard from the dissidents at the station or callers or angry, you know, and you always talked about how when you were trying to get information from a Democrat or Republican, because you throw them into the same ball at this point, you used to use the word vagaries. You remember you always used to use the word vagaries. And whenever I hear you now answering questions about the internal problems, all you've been speaking every single time, and I say in this respect, I'm not condemning you, is vagaries. Mm-hmm. All you've given is vagaries, no specifics. You haven't talked about grandpa. You haven't talked about this one or that one, the other one. You just give vagaries like a Republican would tell you, rhetoric. And I'm still waiting for you to tell me the truth. We haven't heard it. And you keep talking vague. That's all I want to say. I still love you deep in my heart.
Thank you.
Okay, but
okay, thanks, Adam.
I don't have to tell you. You know what I'm talking about,
sure.
And I'm sure you don't.
I will address it. I will address the question.
Please.
I started out this whole thing, this whole fracas, if you will, when it started. I pointed out back then that this was a case, our difficulty is a case of manufactured dissent. I have not changed my mind, except that it is far more confirmed that that is the case. It is a case of manufactured dissent. It is a case of manufactured dissent that is located right here in our midst. I haven't changed my mind, except that I've become far more convinced than ever that that is the case. I have also insisted that it is an internal matter. And I said that from the beginning. It is an internal matter. And as an internal matter, I think it should be dealt with internally. Now, apparently a lot of people do not agree that internal matters should remain internal, and so they have exported, in my view, to great embarrassment to themselves and to this institution and to the foundation, they have exported an internal matter and now have complicated it by a web of lies, misinformation and disinformation, and now compounded by acts of violence and terror. Now, I don't need, I do not desire to join the fray, because I know exactly what is going on. I'm quite aware of it. Now, I understand that some people have need for information because, like all good propagandists, the need itself has been manufactured. Your need to know has been manufactured for you. And you will know. But I also have, in my mind, and this has been my way of operating, I do things in my own time. I do things when I'm ready. And I do things so that when I present information, I'm known for it. I'm very careful in researching everything I say. So that I'm able, when I talk, I'm not going to be talking from a point of emotion, but a clinical analysis, which is what my training as a journalist tells me I ought to do. You and many other people have been basically inundated with information, all much of it, I should say most of it, one-sided, and too much of it, way too much of it, completely wrong. But I'm not here to involve myself in some kind of a spitting contest with anybody. I'm not interested in that. I have a mission to fulfill. I have a job to do. And with the rest of us, the vast majority of us, we are doing that job. We are doing the work. We're not interested in holding news conferences and sending out poisonous press releases and producing a propaganda campaign that is aimed essentially at camouflaging what I know to be very narrow personal agendas to hijack not only the station, but the entire foundation. It's a very serious thing, and it requires a very thoughtful response. I'm not given to flying off at the drop of a hat. Never have been. Won't do so now.
22 minutes after the hour, and moving right along with your calls for Utrecht Lead, our guest in studio. The subject this afternoon is free speech. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Good afternoon. You are on the air.
Good afternoon. It's Mike from Manhattan.
Good afternoon, Mike.
I just wanted to, it's a very quick comment talking about the First Amendment. And, you know, just listening to you over these 3 days, it amazes me that, you know, you can't take cultural ethnicity, I mean, you can't take those paradigms out of the discussion when you really talk about anything in America. When you're talking about the, you know, media, especially, it, you know, it's obvious that, you know, whoever controls the media controls the images. And I think that we all know at this point that if you watch the 6 o'clock news long enough, you start to believe everything that they say. And one thing that they do right now is called fear. Now, you know, radio falls into this also.
Yes.
But, you know, there was this, and I'll just say this quickly, you know, there was this one, you know, story about this car theft ring, I think it was in New Jersey, right? And they caught everyone. They had their mugshots there. The leader was an Asian man, but on television, right next to it, they showed a picture of a black man who was, you know, a part of the group, but he wasn't the leader. So, you know, if you understand how the image affects the psyche, I think that you can really understand, you know, what I'm saying just about
but it's
that
also,
one image there.
But it's also true on radio. I mean, if a lot of people, if you repeat something often enough, it also becomes a truth. And, you know, I've been hearing even on these airwaves that I'm supposed to be sitting in embattled studios, and not one person has attacked me yet. I don't know. But if you repeat something often enough, it becomes the truth. In the so-called progressive alternative media, we have a lot of work to do. And this is one of the things that is going to be a sticking point. I mean, Nat Hentoff of the Village Voice, considered, you know, the First Amendment is his big pride and joy, and he's written a great deal about the First Amendment. He wrote something recently, about a month or so ago, about WBAI, and wrote rather prolifically about the First Amendment implications, except he denied me mine. My First Amendment rights. Never called me. Now, here's a guy who says he's about the First Amendment. And the issue is that even in progressive media, or people who say they work for progressive, I don't even know what the heck it means, because, you know, I look at people's conduct. And in that instance, the willful exclusion of somebody being bashed and maligned. Now, do I expect that of a progressive medium? Do I not have the right also of free speech? No. In this situation, even within the so-called progressive world, the view is that only certain people have the right of free speech. Other people do not have the right of free speech at all. Because the conditioning has been, and it's on both sides of the coin, that on one hand, we are accustomed to turning on the television and watching Peter Jennings what's the other guy, Ted Koppel, define the world. It would just, I don't know, it would probably cause insurrection of a national nature to wake up and find Ed Bradley defining the issues of the world. So, I mean, it's about the challenge also within alternative media. We talked yesterday about the paper that we were affiliated with, the City Sun. It was a paper aimed at the African community in New York and beyond it. And we had all kinds of people working mm-hmm. in that newspaper. The aim and objective being that we had just one mission. We were all clear about the shared mission. And I couldn't care less what color you were. Once you signed on to what it is we wanted to do and you were prepared to execute the plan, you were prepared to follow a chain of command, you were prepared to be of service, you were prepared to excel, come on board. Let's deal with that. But it required, if you noticed, people didn't have attitudes, and some people still did have those attitudes about whether, you know, really, mm-hmm. are you truly, really capable of making, running this enterprise, that kind of thing. It's an education.
It's 27 minutes after the hour. We're talking with Utrice Lead. Good afternoon. You are on the air.
Oh, yes. Thanks for taking my call. First, I'd like to shout out a hello to my friend Catherine for being a good friend.
Who's calling?
My name is Eric, and I'm calling from Manhattan.
Yes, Eric.
And, it seems to me that there's a lot of duplicity going on here. You said a few minutes ago that this is an internal matter. You really
yes.
can't discuss it.
Right.
Then you said there's a group of people trying to take over the station.
Oh, yeah.
So that's not an internal matter, and that's a public matter. And, of course, there are a few internal things, but I've talked to some of these people, and they say they would love to have a discussion about all this.
I'm sure they will.
And I think that it is you that's trying to take over the station for a different class of people, for the ruling class, for the class of people that run this country. That's what our analysis tells us.
Eric. Allow me to ask a question. You said, you're Eric from Manhattan,
yes.
and you referred to that as our view. For whom are you speaking?
Those who generally disagree with what's happening at the station and are opposed to the station.
Okay.
And the people that Utrice called unhuman. We're not human beings. And it's not, this is a great, exaggeration, talking about us calling up and saying terrible and negative things to you. That's just not us. That's
okay.
not who we are. That's not who we represent. We represent the concept of equality and justice.
Quick question, Eric. Quick question, Eric. Eric?
Uh-huh.
Quick question. Who is we?
The people who disagree with you.
Oh, okay. And you
all
have
them.
There. And you
well,
have.
Yes. I mean, there is a movement that's opposed to you, and you know that there's a movement. There we have lots of lawsuits against you.
Here's the thing.
There's a very big.
Hello.
Let me just say one thing.
Hello. Wait a minute. First of all, I'm reacting to your decibel level, and you sound quite emotional. I understand you have a great deal invested in whatever it is you have going. But I couldn't care less about who's opposed and who's not opposed. I've never, ever ruled my life that way. It doesn't matter to me one whit who is opposed and who's not opposed. From the day I was born, I'm sure some people were opposed. The day I die, some people will be opposed that I didn't live one day longer. So, in that sense, that view, to me, is as significant as a fly on the butt of an elephant. That view. I couldn't care less. I will tell you this. I know what it is we are dealing with. I'm sure people would like to have discussions and whatnot. They haven't behaved like people who want to have discussions. When people show up and punch people out and do these kinds of acts of terror, that have been going on around the country, these are not people interested in discussion. And yes, that kind of conduct is inhumane. I don't associate that kind of terror and that kind of violence and that kind of ignorance with people who are logical or even people. You're not human when you behave that way. Now, whether people are opposed to me, I didn't run for anything. So let the opposition oppose. I am still continuing to do what it is I set out to do and what I have been asked by my colleagues to do. It is their opinion that matters to me. It is their support that matters to me. It is the community in whose behalf we toil as a collective that matters to me. Now, there are people who would devote, as they do in life, this is the way they live their lives, so they're not doing anything special. There are people who are psychologically built to devote inordinate amounts of their time and energy to being negative and opposing. I am not here to dissuade you from your way of life. Continue your way of life. I will not take on the burden of rehabilitating you. I am not equipped to do that. I'm not trained to do that. And I do not accept it as my social responsibility to unburden you of the path that you have chosen. You are responsible, as everybody else is, for the path that you have chosen. And I could only wish you the best of luck.
33 minutes after the hour. Good afternoon. This is Talk Back, and I'm Hugh Hamilton. You are on the air.
Yes. Hello?
Hello. Hello, yes.
Yes. Good afternoon. This is Joseph from Republic of Brooklyn.
Hello, Joseph.
Yes, Joseph.
Hey, good. How's everyone?
Very well. Thank you, sir.
I hope that flies on the butt of an elephant is not one of those restricted words. Because I wouldn't want to see the AI disappear.
No, it wouldn't.
Tariq Warren, a brilliant lawyer out of Brooklyn, had said once when Samori Marksman passed that he had built a house of cards. I don't know how prophetic that was, but there seems to have been a lot of dissension over the last year or so.
Well, WBAI is a collective of stories about dissension and a lot of ups and downs, and people are agreeing at one point and disagreeing at another point. You know, it was quite a mess in 1977, I understand.
Mm-hmm. Well, I ain't on nobody's side.
We're talking about speech. What do you have to say about speech?
What do I have to say about speech? I have this to ask, though. You said that yesterday, I didn't have a chance to respond to that. You said that you had a plan for increasing the audience and that you were going to dust off Samari's plan, mm-hmm. and that the audience hadn't grown in 7 years or so. And I would like to know, what are the plans for growing the audience? What are the plans? What is that four-point plan? And if it didn't work in those 7 years...
What I would suggest you do is you stay tuned, because it's going to be part of a special presentation that I will make concerning the state of the station.
Okay, so in other words, you will give that
sure.
plan for how the audience is actually going to be increased.
Well, how the audience is going to be increased
uh-huh.
is our internal discussion. All I wish the public to know is that it has to increase. It is a mandate. How we do it, we have the skills internally to deal with that. And we will strategize and accomplish that.
Okay, because when I look at the programming over the last 4 or 5 years, I haven't seen the programming actually change significantly. That the audience, if it has not been increased, then the plan would have to be... Well, you said that's an internal affair, so I'll just stick around.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Joseph.
Okay.
Okay, good. Thanks for the call. Take care. Good afternoon. This is Talk Back, and I'm Hugh Hamilton. You're on with Utrecht Lead.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Junior. I reside in Queens.
Hi, Junior.
Oh, hi.
First, I'd like to say to Miss Lead, I have a tape of you when you were a mediator between a debate between Dr. John Henry Clark and some other professors. I enjoy that tape. I look at it over and over again. I was impressed with your what you had to answer, you know, to the professors at one time when they were talking about your what was it? What the question was? What scholarship you had,
right,
you know, that made you capable, you know, to handle the debate. I was impressed with your answer. I enjoyed that. Also, well, my question, I guess it does have to do with free speech to a certain extent, is what was the reason for, I bought the City Sun.
Yes.
What was the reason for its, you know, going out of business? I enjoyed that paper.
We did, too. The City Sun was basically, it fell apart as a result of a self-inflicted wound. The paper fell victim to horrible management. And in my view, because I legally contested it, in my view, fraud.
Mm. Usually the case with a lot of things that we
yeah,
get into.
That we had an extraordinary editorial product in
yes,
this
it
newspaper.
Was.
It was extremely badly mismanaged.
Mm.
And quite a number of irregularities were occurring.
Oh.
And we could not, at least I could not, the staff prevailed upon me one too many times to seek redress with the publisher, and I said in the final analysis, I will make one last attempt on a Saturday. I will call you Sunday to tell you whether I'll be there on Monday. I called them Sunday, and I told them I was not going to be there Monday because I no longer would associate with something that had ceased to function in an upright way.
I can understand that.
Okay, Junior.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Okay, great. Keep listening. Good afternoon. This is Talk Back, and you are on the air. Good afternoon. Hello? Okay, moving right along. Good afternoon. This is Talk Back.
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
Oh, we can hear you and
okay.
Your radio.
I'm on my cell phone.
Oh,
and I'll probably suddenly cut off as I hit the Suffolk line.
Oh, okay.
But I'll try to talk quick. This is Susan from Suffolk.
Yes,
Susan.
Hi, Beatrice.
Hi.
Well, you know, there are a couple of things that I wanted to say about free speech that sort of fit in with some of the sad regrets I have about what's happening at the station now. First of all, I enjoyed hearing programs about union and working class people. I really enjoyed.
So did we. We enjoyed
that.
It.
And I was very disappointed when the union program was taken off. That was one thing that really bothered me. Another thing that I regret is I understand that one approach to scholarship is sort of an individual, Socratic, bumping apart, you know, John Stuart Mill's idea of bumping together of ideas so that truth comes out. That's one approach to scholarship. My approach is a little bit different. I sort of like the idea of more advocacy, scholarship at the service of groups of people rather than individual expression. And so I guess what I'm disappointed in, and I guess you could say that I'm more in the camp of, say, W.B. Du Bois in his later life as opposed to Marcus Garvey philosophically, okay? So I have a philosophical disagreement. That doesn't mean I can't speak with you. It's a philosophical disagreement. And I see the station taking more of an individual, philosophical sort of approach as opposed to maybe more class analyses of different things.
Well, let me just...
I'm not saying I want to regiment my point of view, but I just sort of feel like I was sort of hurt yesterday with your statements about the left.
Yes.
Because I think that was a generalization.
It is.
Not everybody in the left behaves the same way.
We're clear about that. Again, I'm presuming I'm talking to mature people. When I say the left, has a lot of work to do. It's a general statement. Absolutely.
But, you know, the left, we're all members of the society.
We don't even know. We don't know.
And the right is the same way. I think we're in the fight against
Isn't that too
Bush.
Bad? Isn't that awful to say that the left is like the right? That's the
because
problem.
Because we all live in this society. I don't think because we have a certain philosophy. We work towards being better people. We
yes,
do.
But,
we
but
put
again.
Ourselves up and we try. But what I'm saying is
okay,
we're all
Susan,
fighting
Susan,
let me just respond to you.
All right.
This benefits Bush.
Okay, well. Susan. Thank
All
you.
Right, again, I mean, when we're dealing with analysis, I mean, we can't be hysterical. You know, this benefits Bush. No, it doesn't benefit Bush. Now, let me talk first about programs that are taken off the air when people say, well, Susan said that, well, I used to like to listen to labor programs. Well, so did we. I did not have any intention that the programmers would do something that would jeopardize their presence on the air. That was not planned by me. That was something that they did. And they occasioned, by their conduct, the removal of the program from the air, simply because they self-destructed by their conduct. I don't know that I could be held responsible for other people's conduct that, in effect, had the net result of the program ceasing to exist. You know, people say, well, so-and-so was fired. Yes. It's not that so-and-so was fired. That's one way to say it. The other way to say it is so-and-so did something that necessitated his or her firing. You know, it's as if we are living in an unreal world that simply because a program is not on the air, it is somebody's fault other than the programmers. The programmers are responsible for their conduct, too. And we all are responsible for our conduct. I would say to you, if you could tell me within an entire, we have a radio station in which we have close to 200 people here involved in the programming and activities of the station. And when you say, well, one person is off the air, well, the question is that it should occur to you that if it is so unusual, and it is unusual, well, is it because, why would you naturally assume it is my fault? Now, it's a very interesting question. You know, so-and-so is off the air, it's your fault. No, it's not.
But
it is, you know, as if the person bears no responsibility whatsoever for the fact that the program no longer exists.
But I have a question for you, though, on this issue, and that is, when someone who presents a program is no longer associated with the station,
right,
does the station have the right or reserve the right to continue the program with a different presenter? For example, you are no longer the talkback host,
right,
but talkback exists.
Right.
It's not the same talkback, but it is talkback.
Yes.
There are some people, of course, who, for whatever reason, may have decided that maybe they don't like my politics and
right,
therefore they're not going to listen. There are some other people who got to listen, whatever. But talkback is on.
Right.
Similarly with labor programming, whatever other kind of program,
mm-hmm,
you know, whether it's folk, whatever.
Right.
When someone is no longer associated with the station, does the station reserve the right to present the same programming with a different presenter?
The station has the right to present any program at any time, to cease any program at any time, to add another program at any time. That's the station's prerogative. And by the way, what you're pointing to is exactly my point. The program stays because the program is viable. The hosts are, dispensable. We have a program called Behind the News that used to be presented by Samori Marksman, who died. The program continues because it's valuable. And it was valuable because he made it valuable. The program continues. He is no longer here. Paul Wonder did the movie program, Soundstage, at Soundscape, and he died. The program continues. Now, if some people behave in such a way as to make it impossible for them to continue an affiliation with this program, it is their conduct that causes their termination. That's so clear to me. I don't know why people would automatically assume, but I do understand why they would automatically assume. Somebody needs to be blamed, and people are conditioned. You know, it is everybody else except those who have been anointed as the innocent ones. Everybody else is blamable. But again, I would ask people to kind of connect with the real world and ask yourself a question. If something no longer is the case, is it what? Is it just that people are mean and nasty, or did something grievous happen that the individuals simply would not correct, or just refuse to correct, or refuse to adhere to rules that are here? We have rules. Some people think we have none. We do have them.
It's 47 minutes after the hour. Good afternoon. This is Talk Back. I'm Hugh Hamilton, and you're on with Utrice Lead.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Good Hamilton and Ms. Lead.
Good afternoon.
I would like to make 2 points, and would also like to make a third, if possible.
Well, let's start with the two, see where we go from there.
Okay, that'd be fine. I'd just like you to know that the third point would aim at greatly enlarging the listenership at very, very little cost to us.
Okay, but let's hear the first two anyway.
Okay, fine, thank you. The first point, I'd like to begin by paraphrasing the fairy tale Alice in Wonderland.
No, we don't have that much time.
No, really. One sentence, sir.
Okay, one sentence. Go for it.
In it, Alice makes a comment, and the queen repeats what Alice had said, but makes several changes. When Alice complains that this is not what she had said, the queen says, "It is so if I say it is so." Okay? That's my first point.
Good.
The second point is, I'd like to ask, what do Momia Abu-Jamal, Bernard White, Janice K. Bryant, Errol Maitland, Mimi Rosenberg, Robert Knight, all have in common? The answer is...
Oh, you're answering your question.
Yes, madam.
Okay.
The answer is that they are all black men and women who are opposed to you, madam. Not because you are black, but rather because of what you represent.
Great. What's your name?
My name is Robert.
Okay, Robert, let me respond.
Now,
Let me respond.
Would you like to comment, or would you like to cut me off now before I can say anything else?
No, what's going to happen? By the way, Robert, this is my program, and...
so what?
No, okay, well, let me...
your salary.
Okay, let me explain so what. So what
no,
I mean...
By the way...
Please don't explain.
Yeah.
Please do not explain.
Okay. All right.
This is what I mean. You know, individuals like this disqualify themselves because they do not really come from a point of respect. But, madam, you know, hey, you don't know what I do on the weekend to call me madam. But anyway, what Mumia has, Mumia, of course, is not an employee, never was an employee. But I tell you what he has in common with everybody that he listed, and that is... they have been enmeshed in a very strong campaign. Mumia, by the way, made a comment, and it is a comment that his family members are extremely clear about how it came about. And I say this, Mumia Abu-Jamal still has my greatest respect as a journalist because he prefaced everything he said with the quote that, I'm paraphrasing it, that your conclusions are only as sound as the information on which it is based. And he says it not once but twice, indicating that his conclusion was based on the information he was given, not the information he was allowed to ascertain himself, but information he was given. So he based his conclusion that way. Here's how he redeemed himself. The very people who pressed him to make that statement were the ones that he fired within 2 weeks of making that statement, because they did the thing that many people do. And he was a victim of his own legal team, who betrayed his trust, compromised his case entirely, and violated the sanctity of attorney-client privilege for financial gain. They were ruthless and absolutely uncaring about their actions. That they would use first that the statement, they would exact a statement from a man on death row fighting for his life as if he has Pacifica or anybody, any individual's career to worry about. That they would extract a statement from a man in that situation, and then propose to sell the sum total of the privileged information that they have acquired simply by virtue of their association with him. Here's a man on death row, prepared to walk it alone if necessary, rather than continue to put himself at the mercy of predators. So that addresses Mumia. I'm pleased to know that Robert considers Mimi Rosenberg a member. They're all black. Well, that's good.
Black men and women. Yeah.
Black men and women. So much for that. But beyond that, I did explain earlier that our conditioning as a society works on everybody, black and white. In the same way that many people are conditioned to expect that they will be in control of all things, other people are conditioned to expect that they will always be told what to do. It is a sad thing. We've seen this over and over and over again. A lot of people, you don't see their hand, but it's there. And very cleverly disguised, but it's there. And in every struggle, you see faces that appear to be at the center of the struggle, but really are not. They don't have a clue, for example, about some of the decisions that have been made in this so-called manufactured struggle. This is a manufactured struggle. And it's not about the elite, it's about money. It is about individuals wanting power and money and seeing a moment because of the particular temperature within the Pacifica Network, an advantageous moment to hijack it. You can't hijack it and you can't steal it without first camouflaging your intent. So you camouflage your intent.
We've been talking this afternoon with Utrice Lee, general manager here at WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. Today was the third in a series of discussions, conversations that we're having under the general umbrella, the battle for the mind. And today we focused our attention on the issue of free speech. And today is Wednesday. I'm here Monday through Thursday from 3 to 5. I have one more day to go before the end of my broadcast week.
Oh, I sense it coming.
Okay, good. So you know what?
Yeah.
I'm going to make a clean sweep of it.
Oh, queen sleep.
I know. Isn't that something?
Queen sleep.
Yeah, that's right. So can I ask you to join us again tomorrow in
Absolutely.
The afternoon?
No question.
At 3 o'clock.
No
and
problem.
You will be here.
We'll be here.
Okay, good. Thank you very much, Maria. For your fine engineering.
Thank you, Maria.
I am Hugh Hamilton.
Yes, you are.
Yes.
You still are.
Just in case you hadn't noticed. And we will be here again tomorrow in the afternoon at 3 o'clock doing this all over again. The good Lord willing. And the quick don't rise. La 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 la
WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Coming up at 5 o'clock is Behind the News with Chappelle.